And welcome to the program, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Home to outside the beltway patriots, to people, not politicians. And yes, this is a macroaggression zone where, well, let's just get started. So, all right, you probably know someone who Pokemons. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but I guess people who have pokes, is that what it is? Well, people who play this new Pokemon Go game. On principle, I refuse to download, although I think, I'm guessing it's mostly people who are out of work, young, maybe in their mid-20s, and living at home. Anyway, Nintendo, the makers of the game, have you heard how much money they have made on this? Their market cap has gone up $9 billion in 1 week. I think the stat is that as of Friday, there are more people who've downloaded Pokemon Go than Tinder. Which just goes to show you that when you are a gamer and like to play games, you prioritize that over sexual intercourse. Anyway, that in fact happened to somebody very real. There is a young man, a millennial, in fact, who lamented to the New York Post about how Pokemon Go ruined his life. What happened, you ask me? Let me tell you. Apparently, he was canoodling behind the girlfriend's back with an ex. He was over at her apartment in another part of town. I think this was in New York. And he decided that after said liaison was over, he was going to see if he could catch some Pokemons and fired up his app. Now, the only problem is that if you don't know, the way the app works is that it interfaces or connects somehow with your maps. And so you've got to follow roads and sidewalks, and there's actual buildings. Yeah, people are getting into trouble, right? They're going onto private property. They're trespassing to go catch these Pokemons because the app will put, I don't know how it works, but I assume there's some arbitrary algorithm that puts these little Pokemon creatures that you're supposed to catch, that you get points and move up levels. They put them, it's like a giant virtual Easter egg hunt. So this guy goes, oh, I'm in a new place where I haven't been in since I got the app. I wonder if there are any Pokemons laying around. The only problem is he was cheating at the time. And when his girlfriend saw that he was catching Pokemons at his ex's apartment, she dumped him. Yep, that's it. See you later, Feraligator? Is that one of the creatures you catch? You know, this game is absolutely nuts. And I think in the first few days, I saw people walking around our office, and they've got their phones out. And yeah, people are catching Pokemons in the mall, and cars are crashing. You know, people are trying to catch Pokemons while they're driving. This is the next closest thing to the Rapture. There are so many people. It's like vehicle unmanned in case of Pokemon. This is crazy. If you know somebody that Pokemons, be prepared to not see them for a while. Oh, and then there's these gyms. Have you downloaded this app? No. Okay, because you have a job, right? Like three jobs. So that's, you don't have time for this kind of stuff. So there are these gyms. And if you're a parent, let me tell you something. This is extra creepy. If you think this is just some cute little Pokemon game that your kid is playing, no. Because this app will actually lead your kids are out and about with their phones, walking around out in wherever, but they're going maybe to places that they normally don't go to. They're deviating from their usual paths because they're trying to find places where these Pokemons might be hiding. And they're not going to be, I guess the thinking is, they're not going to be on major paths. Well, I'm a parent. My kids are still pretty little, but if I had teenagers, I don't know, even 13, 14-year-old, I wouldn't want them wandering down the back alley route. You know, if they're going between my house and Susie's house, I want them to take Main Street. You know, I want them to take them the direct path where people are. The other problem is, so not only are these kids taking these back routes, right? There's these gyms. I don't know how it exactly works, but it's meetup places where you can challenge other people to control the gym. So now, you know, you've got parks who late at night, where late at night they've got a bunch of cars, you know, weird people coming in, battling for Pokemons, and you have to go there. You actually literally physically have to go there to do the battle. So you know how you worry about your kid connecting with weird people on the internet? When they play a game like on Xbox and they're interfacing with other gamers, those gamers are in Ohio. You know, likelihood of meeting them face-to-face, literally nil. But the whole way this game works is you have to go there and meet up with the people. If that doesn't freak you out, I don't know what does. So there it is, Pokemon Go. I tell you, we gotta talk about this whole Black Lives Matter thing, because I have had it up to here with this, and I'll explain. If you, I'm just gonna tell you, if you're someone who hashtags Black Lives Matter, you gotta put your earmuffs on, or prepare to have your, you know, have them seared, singed off, because I'm. We're gonna get into some facts here that I think you need to consider. So the whole, okay, the Obama speech, let me start with that. Obama goes to Dallas to eulogize 5 slain police officers. And, you know, the speech for the first half of it started okay. In fact, I'll go as far as to say it was quite good. A lot of what Obama had to say was just your there was a little bit of tough love in it, but it was pretty direct, it was pretty lofty, it was pretty inspirational. And the whole time I'm thinking, oh my God, this can't be. And of course it wasn't. It was a giant setup. Because what Obama did was he just said, I mean, it was almost as if he was saying the stuff in the beginning just to be able to have a counterweight to his real agenda at the end of the speech. Now, there were a number of, and we'll go through it today. I mean, I'll get into it because I think it's important to point out all the nonsense that he said. But if you saw the speech, the moment where it all fell apart was when he said, "Now I am not naive." You remember that part? Now, of course, my ears perked up because I found Obama to be anything but fully aware. Okay, so let's go through this. This whole assertion that it's easier for a kid growing up in the projects to buy a Glock than a book is insane. It's insane. You know, the funny thing is, in Chicago, where Obama is from, a city Obama ought to know like the back of his hand. You know how many public libraries? I looked this up. There are 80 public libraries in Chicago. And 95 public high schools with libraries. So, in any of which, you can go and check out a book for free. You don't need a permit. You don't need any money. Nothing. Now you think, well, now, Sam, Chicago, it's a big place. Only 80 public libraries, only 95 high schools. Well, let me give you some perspective. That's like one for every 1.3 square miles. This is just a patently absurd statement. And the reason he said it is because he immediately had to go and insert an anti-gun agenda. And true to Obama fashion, everything that the whole speech ended up being about was how government has failed us. Nowhere in the speech did he say anything about black fathers abandoning their kids. You want to talk about cold, hard truth? It's what the Dallas police chief said. You know, they're expecting us as cops to step in to the place of parents, to parent, to be social workers. And why is that? Well, there you have it. One of the reasons. But this demagoguery, and I want to get into it because this isn't new. Remember Ferguson? Michael Brown, and this is where the whole Black Lives Matter movement started. This was ground zero. And before the investigation before the crime scene was even wrapped up, Obama was on national TV telling us his opinions. You remember this? This is a tragedy. This shouldn't have happened. Condemning the police officer and the department before any investigation was in. Remember Trayvon Martin? It's another one. Obama and his address, talking about the son I never had. Well, the press played along with it beautifully, showing pictures of Trayvon when he was a kid instead of how he looked at the time of the incident. I have some insight on this. I want to talk about Philando Castile and Alton Sterling. I want to talk about these cases that led ostensibly to the shooting in Dallas, because I'm telling you the media has it wrong. So when we come back, let me go through this and then circle back to Obama. You don't want to miss this. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation every weekend.
Yeah, remember when Obama was supposed to be the great unifier? I remember that. All my lefty friends said, you know, Sam, don't worry. This guy, this is exactly what America needs. We need a guy. He comes from a place of moral authority. He's biracial. He's so eloquent. Remember that? And he's going to unify us. And we're going to create post-racial utopia. So why hasn't it happened? And this is it. It hasn't happened because Obama's the one who had the moral authority to get up and say, look, Michael Brown, Ferguson, y'all need to quiet down because it was a justified shooting. And he could have waited. Now, you got to understand, the officer that shot Michael Brown was cleared by a grand jury and the Justice Department. He was cleared, just make this absolutely clear, he was cleared by Loretta Lynch's Justice Department. But Obama didn't wait. He didn't wait for that investigation to unfold and come to a conclusion. Instead, he jumped in and immediately validated and talked racism. When he could have appealed for calm, asked that we wait for the end of the investigation, but he didn't do it. And it's moments like that where he really forfeited a giant opportunity to be the unifier that we all hoped that he would be, because I'll admit, even I thought, well, at least, you know, I know he's a radical socialist and I know that he wants to take my gun. But I also hope that at least maybe he will achieve some of these goals and that he's going to be an advocate of civil rights and certain freedoms that I hold dear. And I was looking forward to that, none of which materialized. So when we talk about Michael Brown, and I want to go to Michael Brown for a minute just before we go to Philando Castile and Alton Sterling. Because if you remember the narrative, and the narrative, it still holds true, right? What's the Black Lives Matter? What's their chant? Hands up, don't shoot. Now, do you know where that comes from? It comes from Ferguson. Because witnesses at the scene said that Michael Brown put his hands up and said, don't shoot. And so there were these rallies everywhere held, and the, you know, and hands up, don't shoot. Now, do you know what? That didn't happen. I have to remind you of this. Don't get suckered into thinking that this is the narrative just because it's being repeated over and over by every drive-by media guy. The reality is that there were several witnesses that lied. And in the Justice Department investigation, there were a number of people that lied to the FBI, people that weren't even at the scene. One lady, if I remember this right, one lady later said, well, I just wanted to be in on some of the action. I wanted to be part of the story. No, I didn't see it. I wonder if she ever got prosecuted for lying to the FBI. Probably not. Michael Brown, let's go through this, stole cigarettes, assaulted a clerk. The call comes into Ferguson PD. The officer that responded sees him and a pal walking through the middle of the street. He says, please move to the sidewalk. The guy says, F you. And then Michael Brown comes toward the officer and grabs him, slams him on the side of his face, and goes for his gun. The officer describes when he's trying to push Michael Brown away from him, he describes it as a kid trying to push away the Hulk. Michael Brown is not a little guy. He is not a weak guy. They're struggling for the officer's gun. And then what happens is Brown starts walking down the street. He's ordered to stop. He stops, turns around, and starts walking aggressively towards the officer. He refuses commands, and he's shot. Officer was cleared. Done. So the thing is that the whole premise of Black Lives Matter and going back to Ferguson is that there's these racist cops out there looking to shoot and kill black people. It's like hunting. They're out hunting. That is what the Black Lives Matter protest movement is about. That's the narrative. It's just not true. At least it's not true in that incident. I believe strongly that there are circumstances where officers violate the human rights, civil rights of citizens. I even believe, certainly, that there are cops out there who are racist. But I don't think that it's this, we'll go through the numbers because at the end of the day, I'm much more preoccupied with the math than I am about anecdotal stories. It's rare. And I also want to give you a little bit of a lawyer's perspective here on how these cases are evaluated, because they're not the number one thing that we have, the fundamental problem that we have in our country is that we evaluate our problems, our not just bad political issues, but even our interpersonal problems. We evaluate them based on our feelings. It's always this thing about how we feel. Liberals sell this. We know this. They sell, how do you feel? We want you to feel. We feel. It's not about the feelings. And when it comes to justice in our country, it has to be about right and wrong and the rule of law. The whole discussion can't just devolve into a giant feelings fest thing. Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, that should be the new hashtag, right? Facts don't matter. Exactly. So what happened? Let's talk Alton Sterling for a minute. This is the guy, this is in a Minneapolis suburb. He's in Baton Rouge. And what does he do? He's out on a street corner. I think he's selling CDs or some goofy thing. He's on a street corner. And there's a 911 call that comes in that he's waving a gun and he's threatening somebody with a gun. Now, let me ask you something. If you are the police officer that goes out to the scene of that call, if you, through the radio, hear there's a dude on the corner, he's waving a gun, do you go in? I mean, what do you think is going through your mind? I'll tell you what's going through mine. I hope I make it home tonight. I hope I make it home tonight. And also, another thing that I'm thinking, he's got a gun. Yeah, it's that simple. I hear there's a gun, I'm going to assume there's a gun. So they get out there, and the guy's not waving a gun. So they go to talk to him, and they decide to make an arrest, and the guy starts to resist arrest. Now, we see the video. You've seen the video. It's on Facebook. It's everywhere. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's saying how awful it is and how unjustified and it was a modern-day lynching is what it's been called. And I'm going to tell you what I see now, and I have handled police excessive force cases, and I'm going to talk to you about one later in the show today, because I think it's important to understand how these cases work and kind of get into it. But what you look for in this case is there a threat? Is there an actual present threat at the time a force is used, whether it's deadly force or other? And what you had was you got these two guys, you got two cops, and they're trying to restrain the guy, Sterling. And what is he doing? Well, he's resisting arrest. He's writhing, he's wriggling around. They're telling him, stay calm, stay put, hold still. And he's refusing. Let me give you a little pointer here. If the cops go to arrest you, even if it's total BS, even if you're totally innocent, you don't resist. Just follow every command. And he's on the ground. You got to see the video again. Look at it. And then what happens, and there's two views of this. They see the gun in his waistline. He's got it tucked inside of his pants. And what they see is they see the butt of the gun, meaning the little handle, the handle of the pistol that he had tucked in his pants. And it's at that moment, or 2 moments later, that he starts reaching for the gun. Or he's reaching to pull up his pants. If you have a gun, and you go, and your hand goes anywhere near that gun, a cop is going to shoot you. And let me tell you something about this Alton Sterling case. 100% justified. These cops are going to be cleared. Because if you've got somebody who's resisting arrest, they're not following your verbal commands, they've got a gun, you see the gun, and you see them going for the gun, that's it. And by the way, they already tried to tase him, so don't give me there's alternative methods. They tried to tase him, and it didn't do anything. And what the thing about these incidents as they accumulate is the real concern that we ought to have in our communities, that cops are going to be too afraid to protect us. And in fact, when you go back to what happened with Michael Brown, and I keep going back to Ferguson because I see that as being the starting point of all of this. You know, that kid, we'll call him a kid, but he was a big hulking guy. But, Michael Brown, Cobb gave him a command, and he said, you know what, F you, and disobeyed the command. And I'm telling you, you got to think about what kind of a society you want to live in. Because I am worried personally for my safety and for the safety of my community to live in a society where people are not, where they think they don't have to follow what the police tell them, and where the police are too afraid to enforce the law. So when we come back, I'm going to talk, and this one's going to be touchy, so I warn you, Philando Castile, I'm going to tell you why that is not what it seems. I'll use the account exactly from what you saw on Facebook. I'm going to go through it. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the case I worked on fairly recently and tie it all together. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
This is James Bergener. Finally, there's a weekend radio show that doesn't suck. Listen to Sam Nation with me every Saturday and Sunday.
And welcome back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. If you're just tuning in, let me tell you, we are getting deep into the whole Black Lives Matter protest and police shootings. And I'm getting into stuff that you're just not hearing. I'm guessing you're not hearing anywhere else because I'm not seeing it anywhere else. I'm mystified how these shootings of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile are being talked about without really any critical thought into whether or not they were justified. If the premise is cops shot a man because he was black, cops are racist, then you can only make that point if you can say unequivocally there wasn't a threat, there was no justifiable reason to use deadly force. And fortunately, and I talked about this last segment, I always say about this is just we it's all about feelings. Most political discussions in this country always devolve into what you feel, and it's worse, especially the younger you are. It's all about you and your Instagram and how many likes you get and how much validation you get and how you feel and your self-esteem, and that's all BS. Because what matters is your performance. The statistics matter. How much did you score on that test? If it's on a curve, how well did you do relative to your classmates? And here, what matters are the facts. And the law is the law. Thank goodness for now. And I tell you, you can't call it murder. You can't call it murder if you don't have the elements of the crime. One of the things that you have to prove in a murder case, I don't think a lot of people realize this, but you have to prove malice aforethought. You have to prove that there was an intent to kill. And so everybody say these guys were murdered. Well, you got to prove that the cop showed up ready to kill some guy. Better yet, hey, I'm going to kill a black guy today. You've got to prove that. Tell me how you're going to prove it. It's tough, and it's especially tough when there are signs of justification in the interaction. So I talked about Alton Sterling and how he's resisting arrest. He goes to pull for his gun and gets shot, and everybody's talking about it like a modern day lynching. I'm confused. I don't see it at all. Those cops are going to be cleared. And now I'm going to talk about Philando Castile. And now he's the guy in Minneapolis. And you'll recall, this is the one where the immediate aftermath of the shooting is broadcast on Facebook Live by his girlfriend. Okay, so Castile is the driver of the vehicle. And in the video, it's not exactly clear because it's on a mirror mode. So it's got everything in reverse. If you've seen the video, you'll see it's kind of confusing. But Castile is driving the car. And his girlfriend's in the passenger seat, and they've got her daughter in the back seat. And we don't know what the interaction was, but I'm going to go through it as best as I can because I'll even defer to the girlfriend's account. He gets pulled over ostensibly for a taillight that's out. But we also know that the officer has his vehicle description listed as a suspect in a robbery. So the officer has probable cause to pull him over. And there are very strict constitutional standards for what that is, and they were followed. So we'll start with that. We have a legitimate traffic stop. Now, I'll tell you the do's and don'ts of a traffic stop. And Robbie is in there nodding very, very, very profoundly. If you saw him, he's nodding. And the reason Robbie's nodding is because we're on the way to the studio. And we get pulled over by LAPD. Now, ironically, I am a white man in a Porsche driving fast. And I'm pulled over by a black LAPD officer. How about that? Let me tell you what I do. And you can vouch for this, Rob. I pull over to a safe spot as fast as I can. Second, I turn my car off. I roll down my windows. All of them. Three, I take my key out of the ignition and I put it up on the dashboard. Four, I put, now again, I'm a white man in a suit, in a nice car. I put my hands, palm up on my dashboard. I'm not a very flexible person because I don't do yoga. So it's kind of an uncomfortable position. Let me tell you something else. It's a vulnerable position. It's a subservient position. I have an ego, okay? Trust me, I'm sure my wife is listening, she'll back me up on this. I have an ego. I think I'm a pretty accomplished guy. But here I am getting pulled over by a cop, and I want to go home. Okay? I also respect his job. I know he has a tough job. And I want to make sure that he is 100% at ease when he comes up to my car. I want him to see my hands, and I want to show him that it is very difficult for me to, from that position, harm him in any way. And the next thing I'm going to tell you, and this is where I think it cost Philando Castile his life. And it wasn't that he was black. This is the most absurd thing. Philando Castile is sitting on his wallet. He's one of those guys, you know, and maybe you do it too, but he carries his wallet in his back pocket. And I don't know how that's comfortable, by the way. Wait, what do you do? You just sit on your wallet in your back pocket? Isn't that like you're sitting crooked? Especially if you've got one of those George Costanza wallets where you've kept every receipt from the whole last 2 years in it. It's just a giant thing. So he's sitting on his wallet, and picture this. His wallet is in his, he's a right-handed guy. His wallet, presumably then, on his right buttock. If he is a right-handed guy, and now this is where it gets interesting, we don't really hear about this a lot, he had a permit to carry a concealed weapon, and he was carrying a concealed weapon at the time of the traffic stop. So the cop comes up to him and says, license and registration. You know what? And again, we'll see how the facts play out. But when a cop tells me during a traffic stop, license and registration, I then ask for permission for every movement that I make. Correct, Robbie? You saw that. I ask permission because I want the cop to have advanced warning of every move that I'm making and not to be threatened by anything that I'm doing. It's that simple. It's not because I am afraid of him. It's because I respect his job. I respect the difficulty of it. I respect the risks. I know I'm not a risk. I know I don't want to hurt him, but he doesn't. And I need to do everything I can to make that traffic stop go easier for him. I also don't like getting tickets. And so, if for no other reason you listen to my advice here, this will get you out of tickets because cops will be very grateful to you for being a respectful citizen. Truth. Did I get a ticket during that stop, Rob? No. Look at that. Expert level. And it really does come down to that. Anybody in law enforcement I talk to, they absolutely appreciate people who cooperate with them and make their lives easier. It's like any job. You have a job. It's something you do every day. When you have a customer that comes in and makes your life easier, do you treat that customer better? For sure. 100%. So what did Castile do? And if you're just tuning in, we're just taking apart this whole Black Lives Matter thing and the BS that is the premise of these racist cops out there just allegedly shooting black people for fun, for sport. So, and can I also add, a Hispanic cop comes up to the car and he it's a traffic stop. Philando Castile's driving and he says license and registration. And so what does he do? Well, the gal says, his girlfriend that was in the car that ends up filming the video that we've all seen, he was reaching for his wallet and the officer just shot him in the arm. Now, we don't see that on the video. The officer then, what we do see on the what we do see coming on the video a moment later is the officer saying a bad word. I told him not to reach for it. And he still has his gun trained on the guy, right? Pointed at Philando Castile. So I'm going to tell you what I think happened. What happened is this. Philando Castile has his wallet in his back pocket, right buttock. He's a right-handed guy, so he's got his gun on his right hip. It's what you do. You know, it's not like the Wild West where you have one on each hip. No, if you're right-handed, you keep your gun on your right-hand side. So, now, where is your right-hand side relative to the police officer? It's on the dark side of the moon, right? Your right hip is out of sight from the police officer. So what happened? The cop says, license and registration. And Castile mumbles to him something about a gun. I'm licensed to carry a gun. And then reaches for the gun. The cop says, don't. And in that moment, that officer has to make a split second decision. Now, I'm telling you that that split second decision is not one that I envy one bit. Not one bit. And I can't even imagine what it must be like. But anyway, when we come back, I want to tell you about a police shooting that I worked on that happened here in Southern California that actually was not justified. And these things do happen. We have to be aware of it. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Now imagine you are collecting Pokemons. You're out there, you're driving, you've just left your girlfriend's house, like that poor hapless fool I talked about earlier. Your ex-girlfriend's house, cheating on your current girlfriend. You turn on your Pokemon game, you start collecting Pokemon, slaying them left and right. And wham! You slam into somebody. Maybe it's the gym leader, you know, the guy who's controlling the whole Pokemon thing. I don't even know how it works. Long story short, let me tell you something. There are crazy people out on the road as we speak playing the Pokemon game. If they hit you, what do you do? That's right. You call my friend Sweet James. Sweet James Bergener, his friends call him that because he's a guy that cares. He's a lawyer. He's a champion of rights for people who just can't. You shouldn't do it. Don't fight the insurance company on your own. Don't go there. They will not treat you fairly. Insurance companies, they're beholden to their shareholders. They want to make profit. And when they make, the only way you can make profit is to collect premiums and pay as little out on claims. Money in, little money out. That's how that works. So don't get caught. Good people hire lawyers. Smart people hire lawyers. But also make sure you hire the right lawyer. There are a lot of people out there, a lot of imposters on the radio and TV. And there are a lot of shysters out there. Sweet James is not one of them. He's someone that cares. He'll work with you, help you. So if you've been injured, car accident, dog bite, whatever it is, Pokemon bite, whatever, just call Sweet James. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Or visit sweetjames.com. Okay. You know, we're talking about this Black Lives Matter stuff, and just let's go through it. The numbers are important here, and I want to get to these FBI statistics because this is one way that you really can take control of the break room arguments at your place of work, when you get some really opinionated, whiny millennial telling you about how they feel. Because here's the thing. 31.8% of those killed by police are black. 31.8. So that means that roughly 70% of people killed by cops are not black. Let's start with that. Now I know you'll say, well, it's Sam, you know, but blacks only make up 13% of the population. It's a disproportionate number. Let's break that up. Guess what? And I think this is really telling to me. You know that 40% of cop killers, so of the people that shoot and kill or kill police officers by any means, I guess, it's not just shootings, right? 40% of cop killers are black. Think about that. So there's, in other words, there is a higher percentage of blacks that kill cops than there are cops, blacks that are killed by cops. Just think about that. And be sure you use that statistic. Now, I think it comes down to police context. There's just a disproportionate amount of crime that occurs that black people commit than other races. I think the lowest aren't Asians like at the low end of it? I don't have that exact statistic, but anyway, a majority of people killed by cops are whites. Well, cops kill more white people than they do black people. So I don't want to get into this, you know. There is a legitimate argument to be made about policing, about justified force, the use of deadly force. I think that there are plenty of cases. For example, I believe it was Louisiana where there was a guy who gets into a thing, confrontation. He's asked to stop. He's asked to comply. He doesn't comply. And he runs away from the cop and the cop shoots him in his back. That is murder. Okay? Is it racially motivated? Hell do I know. But it's murder. Okay? Because you form that intent to kill. And you know what? It doesn't, that malice aforethought element that I talked about earlier, the elements that make up murder, if you're making an actual legal case, if you're the district attorney bringing the case and you want to convict the murderer, you've got to prove that they formed intent. And it can be brief. You know, the deliberation, the premeditation, it can be very brief, seconds. So I'm not taking, there are unjustified shootings. But you can't use, and your whole movement and the credibility of your case is totally eroded when you use justified killings. And there's no evidence of racial animus. Blacks are charged in 62% of robberies, 57% of murders, 45% of assaults. And again, these are all areas where they make up. You're going to say this is in high crime areas. Okay. Where they make 15% of the population. And I don't think this is a discussion about policing, about racism there clearly are issues in the black community. There are, that we have to confront. And one of the worst things is what these people like Jesse Jackson, right? Jesse Jackson creating just this whole narrative of victimology. I'm a victim. I can't help myself. It's the other guy's fault. What happened to just taking responsibility? You could break these statistics up. I bet a lot of it has to do with parents staying in their kids' lives. That's a huge thing. So why is there a problem with black fathers sticking around for their kids? I know this is not a convenient or nice thing to talk about, but there is a serious problem with that. And so when Obama gets up and says, oh, we ought to spend more money on inner city schools, we spend more money on schools, on LAUSD schools in crappy areas than we do in nice areas. And what does it produce? Nothing. Zero. The kids all go to school and chew gum and yell at their teachers and swear at their teachers because no one at home, you know what they need? They need a good ass whooping at home. That's what they need. Get real. And I'm looking at you, Democrats. You have perpetuated this myth of victimology and victim exploitation because you want voters, and you use this kind of rhetoric, and you build on this kind of nonsense narrative. And this is on you. Shame on you. I worked on a case. I'll tell you about it briefly. That happened. It was L.A. County Sheriff, and what actually went down was there's this guy who retires. He's an engineer. He's in his 80s, and he had top security clearances. Really, really, just a good guy all the way around. And he retires out to the desert, and he gets into a dispute with his neighbor. And his neighbor, it turns out, kind of has this. Well, he starts to call in some phony stuff into the police. Oh, I think there's a meth lab next door. But the other problem is, at the same time, our engineer client, okay, he's also got problems with the building department. He didn't get a permit for something that he put on his property. And the building inspector goes out and he gets mad at him. And so he reports to the cops that there might be meth. Now, next step, very critical. The deputy goes out there, and without proper training, I think he never actually got signed off to be, you know, a drug detection sniffer or whatever it is, goes out to the scene, goes, yep, I smell meth. And on that basis, and on the basis of an unverified informant, and the informants have to be verified, and there's a procedure for that. On the basis of that and the unverified informant, which turns out was the neighbor, who just had an axe to grind, the cops have to figure that kind of stuff out. They've got to talk to the informant and make sure that it's verified. And all the police had to do was actually go out to the scene and verify that there was no illegal activity going on. But long story short, they get a really crappy warrant. And on the basis of that warrant, they decide to do a drug raid. And the deputy that leads the raid is one bad dude. Bad news guy. This guy has killed, I think, like four or five different people. And we got into the past incidents of everything. But anyway, he, no knock raid, go into the house, 6 a.m. Now, this guy is elderly. And he shoots and kills our client as he's in bed. And then he lies about everything. These cops, I'm telling you, this is not the standard of what happens in law enforcement, but these cops lied through their teeth. They said that the guy was standing and aiming a gun at him. There was no gun. They said he was standing. The bullets all had a downward trajectory and lodged not necessarily high up in the wall, but down toward the bottom of the bed. Everything that they said was a lie, and the city ended up paying, the county paying a lot of money. I'm telling you, I am trained to look at the stuff and to look at it critically. But if either Philando Castile's family or Alton Sterling's family came to me with this case as a police excessive force case, as in a civil rights case, I couldn't help them. There's just no way. And the discussion of these cases always has to start not from it's racist, not from a conclusion, but from a thoughtful and careful evaluation of the evidence to determine whether or not the force was justified. And we can't base a whole movement on that. And worse yet, and this will just look up Assata Shakur. This is a FBI most wanted domestic terrorist, cop killer. And she's the one who Black Lives Matter is using for all of their chants and crazy stuff. It's just insanity. So we're back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Please tune in. I'm going to talk about the convention. I'm going. SamNation.com. Check out our Instagram and Twitter and all that good stuff. I'll see you here tomorrow evening. Have a great rest of your Saturday. This is Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC.